Okay, Job chapter 38. And we began last week God's answer to Job. May not, you know, one of my titles says it's not really God answering Job, it's God questioning Job. And certainly the questions are very challenging for Job. They're so challenging that it's impossible really for him to answer. The ones we did last week, how do you answer them? There is no answer. Yet God said to him, you will answer. He says, you're going to stand up like a man and you're going to answer me. So, you know, when God says you're going to answer, you're going to answer. So, Job will have the opportunity. I don't think, let me just throw this and we'll move on to our next day. I just don't think Job's going to answer God the way he thought he was going to answer God when he challenged God to say, God, come talk to me about this. So, because, again, he had a very limited view and a very, like all of us, a view that was more based on self than it was on God. And it's kind of hard to understand those things when we can't see beyond ourselves and the things we find ourselves in. And we, again, I want to just remind you, I don't know that we can blame Job for that, because I think we all would have probably done the same thing if we were in his thing. But God's trying to teach him and trying to teach us not to spend all that time looking just at self, but trust God to be who he is. So let's read on. As God challenges him, we're in verse. Well, last week we did through verse 24, so we're in verse 25 tonight. And I find this interesting. God kind of breaks down creation in this section. And so in verses 25 through 30, he uses water and the power of water and the wonder of it all to challenge Job's knowledge. So let's read those verses. It says, who has divided a channel for the overflowing water, or a path for the thunderbolt, to cause it to rain on land where there is no one, a wilderness in which there is no man, to satisfy the desolate waste and cause to spring forth the growth of tender grass? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb comes ice and the frost of heaven? Who gives it birth? The water hardens like stone, and the surface of the deep is frozen. So he uses his own creation and even the wonder of it to speak about Job's lack of knowledge. To me, water seems like a simple thing, I guess, from a human perspective. It's either vapor, liquid, or solid. Okay. And so if you heat it up enough, it's going to turn into vapor. And if you cool it up enough, it's going to turn into solid. Okay. So we all know that. Job knew that. But God asked him to explain all of it. And how do you explain those type of things? You know, where does rain come from? Well, we know the weather process and stuff like that, but who created all of that? Who made all that happen? Why does it happen the way that it does? How's the earth perfectly put together that it produces the things that it does, where it would take, you know, water even out of the ocean, bring it over land. The time it hits land, you can drink it, but before that, you couldn't drink it. It's a miracle. These are amazing things. The whole process that God's put into place, we can't explain. We can describe a lot of it, but we can't explain it. I found it interesting talking about this, is when I was pastoring in San Manuel, was when they opened up the biosphere. Anybody remember the biosphere down there? When they opened up the biosphere, it was quite the event. I mean, they had every shaman and witchcraft guy and preacher they could find out there to offer a blessing for the new biosphere, which, by the way, was supposed to be a self-contained earth with its own atmosphere, with its own, you know, man can do what God can do. Was pretty much what it. The problem is, they've already messed up, because they had to go get the stuff to bring in there in the first place. And they didn't do like God now. But even when they went and got the stuff to bring in there, it didn't work. And they thought they had made the perfect environment where it would work. You know, like the Earth works as biosphere 2. Earth 2. It didn't work. They had to shut it down several times. They've had they've had all kinds of problems and stuff with it. But now you can go over there and buy a ticket and look at it and say, oh, that's biosphere. There's nothing to it. It's not self-contained. It doesn't do what they said it was going to do. And they were hoping to put all the different climates and all that stuff were going to work in this thing. It didn't work. You know, I guess you could get the snow if you went out back and pushed on the ice machine. So, anyways, it's an amazing thing what man thinks. And you know, when even theologians sometimes, I've read some theologians that seem to think that they got God all figured out. And that's an incredible, prideful approach to God. We are really allowed to share what is revealed, what God has chosen to reveal to us. Beyond that, it's all speculation. And sometimes that speculation is not very good. When a limited man's mind tries to conceive the infinite God from beyond what God has chosen to allow us to know. And that's why we got to be careful, even in Bible study. You know, where people will make statements, dogmatic statements about something that's not even in the Bible. My question would always be, what would give them the right to do that? The Bible doesn't tell them that. Where'd they get that from? And but you know, there's pride in every area, every arena of life, where man thinks that he can replace God. Big issue, you know. On the plain of Shinar, when they were building the tower, what we call the Tower of Babel and stuff, and they were talking about reaching the heavens, you know, or reach to God, and there's different interpretation about that. You know, did they actually think they could build a tower high enough to get to the heavens, or were they actually talking about what we might even call a big think tank today, where they would come together and they would, you know, develop themselves and do all that stuff to where they could replace God in their own minds. Think about it. Human history is filled with that attempt, even till today, where people want to replace God with themselves. They become their own final authority. They become their own God. I was find it interesting this week after I started on Ephesians. I just happened because I browse a little bit, listen to other pastors and stuff, and heard the Methodist pastor here in town. He started a message on Ephesians, and he started Ephesians 1:1 just like I did. So Ephesians 1:1 says, "I, the apostle Paul, or Paul, the apostle of Jesus Christ." You know, it says that and stuff. So the first statement out of that pastor's mouth was, "Paul didn't write Ephesians." So I'm real interested now. Can you tell me where he gets this from? Well, it's some 13th century monk that said Paul didn't write Ephesians. And he says, and this is confirmed by the fact that Ephesians is much like Colossians, and we all know that Paul didn't write Colossians. So I go over to Colossians, and the first verse in Colossians says, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the churches of Colossians. So I'm thinking, wait a minute. Whose word am I going to take? Some 13th century monk, a bunch of eggheads, in seminaries, a preacher who can stand there, a supposed preacher who can stand there and read the verse directly out of the Bible where this ought to be, to me, our final authority, where Paul says, I wrote this to the church of Ephesians, I wrote this to the church of Colossians, and then dispute that he did.
Makes you wonder which verses in the book are they going to throw out? And which
and my point is this, when you approach it that way, you eventually become your own final authority. It's not God telling us anything anymore. It's you making those decisions and stuff. So I thought it was quite interesting that he was starting on that too. But he took a little bit different direction than I did for some reason. But that really bothers me. And you know what? That's where I stopped listening. I didn't care what else he had to say after that. I clicked that button and said, I'll bust this computer. And I didn't want to submit to the finance committee. I need a new computer. What happened to it? I don't know. This animal came out or came in or whatever. He was out of control. Okay. So when you look at this, again, the thought of water and streams and weather and rain and freezing ice and mist and all this stuff, we know, we can describe all these things. But we don't have that kind of control to know where all the origins and those things are and stuff. So the first thing he deals with him is the matter in creation is a matter of water there. Anybody want to say anything there before I move on to the next section? I don't want to jump ahead, but I'm just going through these section at a time because he really just deals with it from different angles. All right, the next section he deals with from the heavenly host or the stars. Okay, so he says, verse 31, can you bind the cluster of Pleiades? How many stars are in Pleiades? Do you know? Seven.
No.
So can you bind them? Okay. Or can you loose the belt of Orion? You have any control over that?
No.
You know, that's what he's saying. Then he goes on, can you bring out Maseroth in its season? Well, what is Maseroth? Anybody look up Maseroth?
Season.
You people who study this stuff? See if you came up with the same thing I got. What is it?
Season.
No, not season.
Mine just says constellations.
It is the constellations as a whole. Okay? Who appear in the skies at different times. That's what talked about the seasons and stuff like that. We don't always get to see all the constellation stuff. So that word Maseroth speaks of the constellations as a whole. So what he says, can you bring them out? Can you say to the constellation, you know what? Time to come on out, type thing. And of course Job can't do that, as he can't bind the cluster, the stars of Pleiades, or adjust the belt of Orion. Adjust the belt of Orion. Or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? And what's he talking about there? It's another, you know, constellation and stuff. Isn't it interesting that way back in Job, now remember when Job is?
Yeah.
It's a long time ago, isn't it? As we've talked about the era of the patriarchs, Job isn't an idiot. I just have to throw that to you. He's not an idiot. He's not some caveman banging his head against the wall chewing on a big bone. You know, the thought that so many people, we're evolving to become better and smarter and stuff. We have no idea how far man advanced before the flood. We have no idea. And you talk about even the advancement after the flood, where God went down and confused their language because God was concerned about how far they would get, even to the place, I think, of destroying themselves. Adam was brilliant. Can you name the stars? Can you name the animals? Adam was brilliant. He had no flaws in his thinking. I still think about this all the time. Maybe I'm off on this one, but that's okay. You can help me, because remember, I can only use 93% of my brain. So if I'm off, it's okay. Okay. I can only use 7% of my brain. 93% is not functional. So.
And we question 7%.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's true. You know, it's like I went to the baseball game last night, and Teresa, she's sitting there, and you know, she's not really into baseball or anything. So she's thinking about. She goes, that guy's batting 300. I said, yes, batting 300. She said, that's pretty good, isn't it? I said, well, only in baseball. I said, only in baseball do you fail 7 times out of 10, and you're doing good. You know, I would have no argument with someone who told me that when Adam and Eve were, and even that whole generation before that, that I don't think God made part of our brain to be useless. I believe he functioned fully. And you think about how incredibly intelligent he must have been if he was a perfect man. And you see over the 6,000 years or so since that, 6 to 10,000 years since that time, the effects of sin, not only on our bodies, but also on our minds and stuff. But Job, and he's talking about these things and he's using the terminology and stuff that was still used today. He was not an idiot, you know. But look at what God's saying to him. God's saying to Job, as you consider all of those things, do you have any control over the heavens? Verse 33 goes on to say, do you know the ordinances of the heavens? The laws of the heavens? The regulations of the heavens, that term can be used all those different ways. The regulation of heaven. You know what controls, you know, rules or laws or what controls. You know what controls the heavens? Do you do that? Do you do that, Job? Can you set their dominion over the earth? Do you decide where this constellation is? Do you decide where this galaxy is? Do you decide the position of the sun and compare it to the earth and the other planets and all those kind of things? To me, what this reminds me again is how awesome our God is. What does he need to hear from us? What could we ever tell him that he needs to hear from us? Yet, he's a loving father who's ready to hear from his children. That's an amazing thing to me. Kelly?
Thought about it as fascinating to send out an explorer rocket ship or whatever, you know. And, you know, they calculated out exactly where that thing's going to go, and then it isn't going to get there for 10 years or 7 years or 5 years or whatever, you know. And it'll come within a couple of miles of where they figure it out. Well, that's something that's running like a clock, you know, for them to be able to do that, you know. Nothing's haphazard,
Yeah. But even the thought where scientists will tell you the universe is expanding and it takes so long for it to expand, so the universe has to be the billions and billions and billions of years old, because they'll use that as their meter and stuff. And to me, I'm just a simple-minded man who thinks simply. And my question always is, how old was Adam when he created him? If we believe creation, one day there were no trees there. The next day, the place was filled with trees. So if you were to take one of those trees and you were to cut them in half, what would you find? Now remember, the day before, they weren't there. How about a rock that they tell you is billions of years old? One day, there is no rock there. The next day, there's a rock there. How old's that rock? I bet if you tested it, even the day after creation, I bet if you tested it, it would have had what I would call innate age already in it. And the universe was set in place. It was a creation of God. Okay. At some point, God started this, what we would call natural law, happening. But it had to start from somewhere. And if I believe what it says in Genesis, I believe that when he was finished with it, it was complete. It was perfect. It was as it should be. And all the processes that we know that are part of that were established by God too. That's why I like that where he asked him, do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Those two are established by God. They're not. God's not regulated by them. He established them. Okay. So, questions on the stars? Insight on what he says right there. That little section right there.
What I like about this section is that it's such beautiful metaphorical language that no matter what time period you come from, you get what he's talking about.
Right.
No matter.
Right. Which psalm is it that says that the heavens declare the glory of the Lord?
19.
Psalm 19?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, just looking at that, and we've all done that. You've just gone out there and looked. I'm sure you've gone out there and looked at the stars and stuff. And it's better if you get away from town and stuff. But it's an amazing thing. And there's places up here when you're on the rim at night sometimes when it's just a clear night, you feel like you just reach out and touch one of those stars, or just they're like the 3D movie where they're right there before your nose and stuff. But it's an amazing thing. And just think, what we see is only a small portion of what is. And yet we have the audacity to think we know at times more than the one who created all that. It really puts things in proper context. That's what he does here. Any other thoughts? Doug?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I thought you were about to say something. I'm sorry. All right. Let's go on to the next part. So the next section, I label this the weather. So we dealt with the water, but look at this weather thing. So, can you lift up your voice to the clouds that an abundance of water may cover you? So who's controlling the rain that falls? Not Job. Okay.
The rain man.
Yeah. This is where they do that rain dance type thing, you know, and get it to come down. Can you send out lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Yeah. I think it's, again, the metaphoric language to talk about that even the sound that's made by creation affirms God. You know, that it does what it does. It just affirms that God is God. And we can't understand it, but it's clear to him. Kind of neat when you start thinking about that. 36, but who has put wisdom in the mind? Or who has given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds by wisdom? And who can pour out the bottles of heaven? When the dust hardens into clumps and the clots cling together. So he challenges him here again on this matter of what we might even say the simplicity of or the everyday occurrence of of rain, weather, that type of thing. But it's not a small thing. It, too, is a huge thing. And none of us can make this happen. And Job can't make it happen. Right? Before we move on now, we're going to move on to... He's going to talk some about the animal kingdom. Isn't it interesting that even he's going to use the animals to again, affirm who he is? Because though we think we have conquered the animals, that's not always true. I got a story for you. Happened today. It's good stuff. Teresa took our new dog, our new little puppy, to the vet. So coming out of the vet, after all the things are done, that puppy decides it's going to pull out of the, not the noose, but the
collar.
The collar. And she takes off down Saguaro Boulevard. And here's my wife. I didn't get to see it. I'd have paid money to see it, though, but I didn't get to see it. My wife chasing the dog. And as she's chasing and calling the dog's running faster. Before long, she says, there are people on Saguaro Boulevard coming and turning their cars sideways, blocking any other cars from coming down. And a half a dozen people are out there chasing this puppy all over the over the thing.
Wow.
Who controls the animals? Now, I'm not blaming God for our dog getting away. But,
yeah, right.
But you know, we have very little control, you know, over those type of things. So.
Is that dog's name Benji?
No. No, but when she told me they turned their car sideways to block other cars and stuff and keep them from... And the lady at Pets Paws or Paws Inn was the one that finally got her and stuff. So she's home. And Teresa said after she got her in the car that she crawls up in Teresa's lap and just looks at her like, everything's okay. This one's going to be a fun one. So, Carol.
Even the ants in my kitchen yesterday, I had no control.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and the email we got from Donna.
What? Did you
get the email from Donna?
Oh, that we have mice here.
Mice in the kitchen?
We have no control.
Oh. If anybody sees anything, please.
We live in a desert. You're going to have mice.
Mice?
We're going to have mice in the desert.
Oh, yeah.
Are we?
Well, and there are times when Carol will actually send me pictures. She probably sends it to some of you of all the animals and stuff and the beauty of the animals. They're just they're amazing, just amazing. Anyway, so let's look at what he says here as he takes us into the animal kingdom, and he goes out actually through verse chapter 39 talking about this. So verse 39, he said, "Can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions?" So who even provides for the animals the food that they eat? He's saying. Well, God does. Okay? "When they crouch in their dens or lurk in their lairs to lie in wait, who provides food for the raven when its young cry to God and wander about for lack of food?"
Doesn't that remind you of the words of Jesus?
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about the sparrow.
God provides even for the ravens. What are you worried about?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's read on. Verse 1 of chapter 39 says, "Do you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young? Or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you find the number of months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bear young? They bow down, they bring forth their young, they deliver their offspring. Their young ones are healthy, they grow strong with grain. They depart and do not return to them." What's he talking about? He's actually talking about the process of life there. And he uses the wild donkey, the mountain goat and the deer to do that. And how do they know to do that? I mean, who set that in order? You know, we want to say it's all instinct because that's the best way we can describe it. But all the natural world is under God's control. Kelly.
I figure like the monarch butterfly, that story, that's something else. You know what I mean? And, you know, the bird migration.
Yeah, hummingbird migrations and all that.
It's just amazing.
And you watch them geese. Don't they blow your mind to see how they do that and how they'll get the drag off the guy in front of them? It's like a NASCAR race. Yeah.
You know, there's a little, in Psalm 8, it starts out... Oh Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth, who have set your glory above the heavens. Then you go down, it says, you have put all things under his feet, all the sheep and all the oxen, even the beasts of the field and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. The guy that discovered, from my understanding, the shipping lanes.
Uh-huh.
Heard that song one time when he was in the hospital. The nurse was reading it to him, and he says, "What was that?" And he went out and charted things with bottles and stuff like that and discovered the shipping lanes.
Because he watched the
he got the inspiration from the scriptures.
So he watched how the fish migrate and all that stuff?
Well, no, just the with bottles and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
All the currents.
Now, and now currents and stuff. And now we save billions of dollars a year just if you get a ship into the lane, you know, you can just cruise, you know. It's like getting into a river, you know. It's just amazing, really.
Yeah. I think about this passage going back to creation, when everything was as it should have been, and all the angels, not angels, all the animals lived together. Didn't have an issue, you know. And who messed that up? Man did. You know, in a disobedience, because man's sin impacted all of creation, not just the human. So, verse 5, who set the wild donkey free? Or who let loose the bonds of the onager? Someone have a different thing for onager?
Swift donkey.
The swift donkey. That's what that means, onager? Okay. Whose home I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwelling. He scorns the tumult of the city. He's wild is what he's saying here. And he wants to be wild. I don't know that, you know, we have wild donkeys here in Arizona. Did you know that? They don't want to be tamed. Leave them alone. You know. They don't want to be tamed. So that's why he scorns the tumult of the city. He does not heed the shouts of the driver. He cannot be tamed. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Verse 9 goes on, another animal. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you? Will he be led by your manger? Can you bind the wild ox into the furrow with ropes? Or will he plow the valleys behind you? So, again, he's describing the difference between domesticated and wild here. And there are differences. Everybody understands that. Okay? Will you trust him because his strength is great? Or will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him to bring home your grain and gather in your threshing floor? The answer is no, you wouldn't trust him. He's not reliable. Being the strongest thing in the world, but if you can't control that strength, it's useless. It'll be just destructive. Okay? The wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are her wings and pinions like that of the kindly storks? What's the point there? How come an ostrich can't fly? How come a stork does? And you've seen a stork fly. They're beautiful when they're in flight.
Well, an ostrich's wings are ineffective compared to the weight of its body, where a stork is primarily hollow bones.
So why does it have wings?
Because God said so.
Okay. Okay. It's so they can make those hats on those women in the Western things, you know.
Queen of England.
Terry.
So anybody have the answer to the age-old question, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yes, the chicken.
The chicken.
I say the chicken.
Yeah, the chicken.
The ostrich.
The ostrich, I don't know. If we were all ostrich age, we could eat on that for a couple of weeks by ourselves. Okay, verse 14. For she leaves her egg on the ground and warms them in the dust. So, again, talking about an ostrich is not really a great mother from that perspective and stuff. But there's not a whole lot going to get into that egg. Have you ever dealt with an ostrich egg? It's like a rock. It's hard as it can be and stuff. She forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Not a good mother. Yet there are other birds that are very good mothers. That's one reason I like to watch the National Geographic, the animal things, because it's amazing to watch, you know, you have this one species that just, I mean, they're like the best mothers in the world, and the other ones, they're the worst thing. They need CPS called on them or something. But, so her labor is in vain without concern. So she really, she produces the egg, but after that, I've done my part. You're on your own. And even when they're hatched, they're pretty much on their own. So they're pretty, by the way, that makes them a pretty, the ones that survive makes a pretty sturdy bird. You know? Because God deprived her of wisdom. She's a simple. So if anybody ever calls you ostrich brain, you can know. Maybe that's where bird brain come from. I don't know. So if they're just saying it, you know, if someone calls you an ostrich, I'm going to remember that one. That's a good one. Because they'll probably look at me and say, I don't understand. I said, that's the point.
Yeah.
And did not endow her with understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she scorns a horse and his ride, and its rider. Okay, verse 19. Have you given the horse strength? And how many of you like horses?
Yeah.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
You know. And one thing I like driving down 87, we've seen them a lot lately, is the herd of horses along here and stuff. But they're beautiful. Horses are beautiful. Have you closed its neck with thunder? Or some of your translations would probably say with a mane. With the mane, the picture there. Can you frighten him like a locust? His majesty snorting strikes terror. You know, think about the old cavalry and stuff, and you guys on the horses had it. You know, that was a big thing. And the thing about horses is they seem at times to be fearless. They'll go right over anything, right into anything, and
they buck too.
Oh, they do buck. Yes, they do.
I just recently watched that movie War Horse, and that was quite interesting. You know, it showed the strength of that horse.
Was that World War One where they had the horses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't seen that one. Is it worth watching?
It's worth watching.
Okay. All right. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. That's probably what I just told you. These creatures are fearless. You know, unless you get a wimp. But most of them are fearless. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him and glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness and rage, nor does he stand firm because the trumpet has sounded. So he's ready. The horse is a beast of aggression. There's no doubt about that. And that's what he talks about there. At the blast of the trumpet, he says, aha. I never heard a horse say aha, but hey. And he smells the battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shoutings. So he's just talking about the majesty and the fierceness and the fearlessness of this wonderful beast that God made. And so to me, the other thing is amazing how God made that horse, that he can actually carry, you know, 200 plus pounds on his back and just keep going. It's an amazing thing. 26. Does the hawk fly by your wisdom and spread its wing toward the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make its nest on high? It dwells on the rock and resides on the crag of the rock and the stronghold. For there it spies out the prey, its eyes observe from afar. Its young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there it is. And again, another incredible animal, the hawk and the eagle, and their ability to see things. I think that what they say, for miles they can see things. And you know, okay, so we have God beginning, as we talked about last week. He begins with talking about some of the created things, the water, the weather, the stars. Then he moves into the animal kingdom and asks Job what he know about all of this, and does he have any control over any of it, basically. And so now, chapter 40, where he said, you're going to answer me. So he's going to require an answer from Job right here. So, chapter 40 begins this way. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. So, this was Job's issue. Now God just spoke to Job for quite a bit, right? Over the difference between a man and the Creator. That's what those last two chapters were about, the difference between a man and a creator. And I would just say this, the vastness of the difference. It's not even close. You know, it's not, you know, it does get to a place where, what could I ever share with God that he doesn't already know? How could I ever correct him in anything? And we sometimes we believers even say, and sometimes we say it very easily, God knows the end from the beginning. There's nothing beyond his knowledge. And then again, when we deal with God, we act like with him that there's something he doesn't know that we got to bring him up to date on. You know, and I think it would change our prayer life. I know it would change mine at times if I could be reminded of these things once again. You know, but remember, I believe, and Ron touched on this, I believe this is a loving father who cares for Job. He loves Job. But Job needs to be corrected. And Job needs to see things properly. And so how would it change your prayer life and how you would approach God as far as what you're trying to say to God if you could remember these truths? As you pray for things, as you pray for understanding, as you pray for things that are on your heart and stuff. We're allowed to do all of that with him. But it would certainly change me to remember these things of who he is. Job wanted God to answer him. God has answered Job. Now God is saying to Job, now you'll answer me. So what could he possibly answer? Because remember, Job said earlier, a couple, three times, what'd he say? All I want is God to come here so I could tell him what is. That's my paraphrase. Okay? All I want to do, I want to have my day with God. And I know when I have my day with God, I'll prove that I'm right. Okay? And so, God answers and proves how far off Job or any of us are when we would challenge God. And so he asks him, you have rebuked God, you have rebuked me, now it's time for you to answer. And so what does Job say? Look at verse 3. It says, then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. Now Job hadn't said that yet. In all this book.
Mine says insignificant.
Okay.
I am unworthy.
Unworthy, okay.
Mine says nothing. I am nothing.
So that's what all those fit very well. Behold, I am, mine says vile. What shall I answer you? And that's a question. How can I answer you? In these two chapters, Job's loving God brought things back into perspective in Job's life. Okay, and he realizes, wait a minute, you're God, I'm not God. How could I even possibly answer you? And if you get back to, you can almost see some of the fear of saying, how did I ever dare even challenge you? You know, so he goes, I lay my hand over my mouth. Okay, I'm going to shut up now, type thing. Or I'm ashamed. That's two different things that can be interpreted that way. I'm not going to say anything more, or I'm ashamed. Both of them would be okay. And once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further. So he's confessing he spoke, but he doesn't have anything else to say. But God's not done yet. Because remember that. God is a perfect father. And maybe you've had times in your life, either with your kids or maybe someone in your life has begun to bring correction into your life, maybe discipline, maybe even discipleship and stuff. And we human beings are kind of strange because we get about, you know, a third of what actually we need to get, and then we've convinced ourselves we've got everything we need. And so we say, I got it. No problem, and we take off. Like you know, on Christmas when the kids were young, and they give you buy these boxes of stuff, and they have come in 1,500 different pieces and stuff. And the way I do it is like this: I look at the picture on the front. I got it. You know, that's not even a third of what I needed to know and stuff. So, but we do that, don't we? We move away. In the midst of God's training, thinking we've got enough to get by. But even that, I want you guys to think about, even that is very fleshly and carnal. Even that is trusting in ourselves. I got it. You know, I'm there now. I can handle this. And I don't know that God ever wants us to ever get to a place where we get to a place where we say, I got it, I can handle this. So God, you Father, you just sit back. Let me show you I can do it. No, that's not what he wants. It's not, that's not our Christian faith. We need him all the time. And we can't walk on our own. He never intended us. Which?
I was just going to say, in regards to that, that's the way I feel about Scripture so often. I read through it and I think, I got it. And then I'll reread it at a later time.
Yeah.
That's why it's continually being renewed in our minds.
And the Holy Spirit is a perfect teacher. You may read and study something one time, and he knows what you're going to receive or what you can receive, or where, even where you're at. And you'll read it again another time, and he'll give you more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have people say, I read through the Bible once, that's all I need to do. Well, I guarantee you, you haven't got it. For the last 7 years, I've read through the Bible every year. And this is really the first time in my life that I've done it since I've been here, you know, intentionally reading through the Bible. Every morning get up and read the, and I do it in a chronological Bible because I just love the way it just flows and stuff. So, but every time I do it, I find new things and stuff, and I'm getting age where I start forgetting things. So I got to go back and get it anyway. So,
so
Carol.
Did God talk to Job and, you know, since he's the Almighty and Job was silent, but I would have thought Job might have said a little confession, I'm sorry, after all he's heard.
Well, you know what? That could even be the reason why God's going to continue. You know, because his first thing was, you know, I said these things twice. I probably shouldn't have said it. Okay, God, I got it. Type thing. That's how I just sort of paraphrase that. It's like our kids when they get caught and they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar and they say, "Oh, I'm sorry." And the next question that you really need to ask, what are you really sorry about? And if the answer is true, most times they'll say, "Well, I'm sorry I got caught." So nothing was learned there except being sneakier next time. But the point is, as a parent, is to deal with your child's heart so they understand why what they were doing was not right. And I think that's probably where we are here with Job, in a sense. Jesse.
Yeah, he's still at that place where he's acknowledging that God is just huge, more than he could ever understand. But he hasn't got to that place where he repents yet. He does further down where he does repent.
Yeah.
And that's where God's trying to get him to that place. So he still hasn't gotten there yet, so he's going to tell him a little bit more.
Which the other thing that this whole thing speaks to me about, I don't know if you guys talk to me this way, what did God say about Job at the beginning of all this?
Righteous man.
He's a righteous man. What does he mean by that? It certainly couldn't mean that Job was perfect in every sense. What does righteous mean to us? It means that God has made us right with him. It's our position with God, which ought to always be reflected in the way we live our life, of course. So when God looked at Job, that's how he saw Job as a righteous man. That doesn't mean Job had all the answers. That means he always did everything perfectly and stuff. And we see that even a righteous man can't know everything. So...
Do you think the fact that he was righteous is evident in the fact that God's having dialogue with him?
Because I think that's a huge thing.
Yeah, because nobody else has dialogue with God, but Job's having dialogue with God.
Well, there are a few that are going to, in a little bit, are going to hear directly from God, but not really dialogue.
Yeah.
Just sort of direction, you know. Yeah. But yeah, that's an interesting point God's not required, even what God's done for Job so far, he's not required to do any of that stuff. But he does. Which again tells us that Job's his.
I think God trusted him a lot to even make this, to know that he would go through this and that he wouldn't turn his back on him.
Well, and think about it. The Father knows the heart of those who belong to him. He knows our heart too. You know, he knows everything about us. You know, so
What's amazing is that in his day, he did not have the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. In our day, we struggle with what's going on with God. We don't even know how to pray. But the Holy Spirit now that indwells us prays on our behalf. We don't understand God's plan for our life. He has not revealed everything to us. And so we struggle with that. And we don't even know how to pray, but the Holy Spirit has now indwelled in us.
Well, and the New Testament does seem to indicate that we have an advantage that the men of old did not have in that sense. But that's not to say the Holy Spirit wasn't at work. It just means that we have an advantage how the Holy Spirit works in each of us. Reg?
I was just kind of tagging on to what you're saying. I think that's why we're called to be found faithful, because we don't have that, someone like Job did. But going back to what you were saying as far as thinking of Job and him not living up to what God's expectations were, so to speak. I mean, you take it right back to Adam. Who had a closer relationship with God than Adam did, the first created, and the disappointment that came out of
And
that.
Which of us have lived up to what we know to be God's perfect expectation? Only his son did.
Right.
Doug?
You constantly talk about the heart condition, and God knows the heart. If you look at these verses here, you'd see that verses 3 through 5, Job says, okay, you know a lot more than I do, I'm not going to talk anymore. But has his heart changed, and God sees that, and he's going to continue, because Job still has a contention with God about what's taking place in his life and why. He doesn't want to talk about it now, but his heart hasn't changed, and God needs to change his heart.
Maybe we can say in some cases we're in the pouting mode right now.
Yeah.
Which we all get into, even with God. Our Father. So
I think for myself anyway, I get in the defensive mode.
Yeah.
You talk about getting caught with your hand in the cookie jar. You know, it's a matter of, are you truly repentant or not, or are you just sorry you got caught?
Yeah.
So I think
Or you can just turn and say, well, the cookies were mine anyway.
Yeah.
A whole nother attitude problem there, huh? So all right, let's go on. We have a few minutes before we stop tonight. So let's go on to God's second time to talk to Job after Job basically said, I'm not going to say anything else. So it says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. And this is kind of a repeat of what he said at the beginning of his first one. He said, now prepare yourself like a man, and I will question you, and you shall answer me. So Job may think he's done with the discussion and responses, but God is telling him, you're not done. It's going to be taken care of. So he's going to ask some bigger questions, bigger than creation, bigger than the animal kingdom, bigger than all these things. And he begins by this one where he says, would you indeed annul my judgment or nullify my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Whoa. That's a pretty heavy those two questions right there are just huge. I want you to think about this, and I'm not asking for testimonies, but I just want to, have you ever challenged God in such a way? And really that's the crux of the issue that Job was doing. God, just come meet with me so you can understand that what's going on in my life is not just. Let me show you why it's not just. And he was challenging God. There's no way to get around that in several occasions. And again, I'm not here to blame Job, because I know I'd probably be in the same. Have you ever challenged God that way? Where you wanted to replace your judgments with his judgment. Do you understand what kind of mess we'd be in if we all relied completely on our judgments and tell God his judgments aren't any good? Let's nullify the judgments of God. This is one of the verses for me. Now, I'm not going to recommend that you use this with a lost person so much that says, I just can't understand why God would kill whole communities and do, a lost person that asks you those questions probably will never get this. And I don't know from a human perspective any of us can totally get it. But to me, it falls under this category right here, who would cast dispersions upon God's judgment, and who would try to nullify them? You know, maybe even some of the questions that we have, like, why do bad things happen to good people? Why do certain people have to go through certain things in life when we cannot find any justifiable reason why these good people need to go through those things? Yet we see it all around us all the time. And we might even flip that over and say, well, why does this wicked person seem like they're prospering all the time, you know, have no real issues in life, their life is easy, they got the world by the tail, it seems like, and stuff. Sometimes we try to take the place of God in judging some of those things. Getting down to the bottom, do any of us think that God's way and God's righteousness will not eventually be justified in the universe? We got to remember that they will be. In this temporal world, sometimes it's hard for us to figure it out because some things don't just seem even to us. And maybe the truth is they're not even. And maybe the truth is they were never meant to be even. Especially after sin came into it. I don't know. I'm just throwing those out there for y'all to think about, because I'm sure you think about those depending on the different things you've gone through in life or are going through in life. They're not easy things. But this is a huge challenge that God gives Job. Basically, are you ready to take my place? And who wants that? Have you ever thought you'd like to be God for a day? I'm glad that you're not. I'm just telling you. Because creation probably wouldn't last a day if one of us was God for a day. You know, it'd be all over pretty quick and stuff.
Light bolt on the water wall.
The movie with Jim Carrey where he gets to be God for a day.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Almighty. Oh, yeah. I don't like Carrey.
That's the premise.
Yeah.
He gets to be God and he messes everything up.
Messes everything up.
Yeah, it's good. It really is. It's funny and better when it is. But it was interesting how he did try to do it, and he just kept digging himself into a hole. It just got worse and worse and worse and worse. But it's worsening.
Okay, so. All right. Any thoughts on that question, verse 8? I don't want to run over that too quickly if someone has some thoughts on that. That is probably one of the... That's got to be a very... I don't even want to use the word humbling. I almost want to use the word crushing question. It leaves you with nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And really nothing to say. What can you say? You know?
But the lost world does that on a continual basis.
And many Christians do too. Yeah. But yeah, but you're right.
How could a loving God do this? How could a loving God do that? Yada, yada, yada. It just never ends, okay? Why would God do that? Don't tell me God is not going to let somebody come into heaven.
And you know what I think? I think guys like Rob Bell, rather than have to deal with the reality of this, want to appease that statement by people and say, well, but... Theologians have got it wrong since the beginning. The prophets are wrong. Jesus was wrong. Love wins in the end. Everybody's going to heaven.
Everybody's wrong but Rob Bell.
Everybody but Rob Bell's wrong. And I think that's the reason is that statement, that because it's uncomfortable for us to answer that question. Let's just be honest about that. It's an uncomfortable place to be in to answer that question. And some of these questions are not ours to answer.
Second half of that verse, will you condemn me that you may be justified? That, to me, it almost describes pride. You know,
well, think about what he's saying.
Pride.
What he's saying is this. Think about this. Job, in order for you to be right, I must be wrong. That's what he means.
Yeah.
Will you condemn me that you could be justified? So in order for you to be right with what you're seeing, I have to be wrong. Which again brings us to a place, if you think about it, where as people say, talking about a sermon about this, that all views of truth are legitimately equal and stuff. You know, it's like the ecumenical movement. Someone says, there's really no difference between Hinduism and Islam and Christianity. And there are people pushing that today and stuff. Islam and Christianity both cannot be right. It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. Because they are... And I'm just using that as an example. There are many examples that people say, but they are diametrically opposed to each other. So here's the truth. Both of them cannot be right at the same time. One can be right and the other wrong, or both could be wrong. But both of them cannot be right. And yet, because we say that our Christian, biblical Christianity is superior to all other isms out there, then we're called to be the intolerant ones. So, you know, that's what God's saying here to Job. Job, you want to be justified, but here's the point. If you're right, then Job, I'm wrong. Jesse.
I just want to share with everybody that Pastor David has a track rack. This is a great little track that answers that question. Biblically, the great
death and suffering.
Why is there death and suffering? It's a great little track. If you ever get a chance to pick one up, because that question I've had that asked of me all the time, well, we've got to allow this to happen. All these children at Columbine, these little kids that were killed. Why would a loving God allow that to happen? And there's some really good answers. I mean, you will never be able to answer it to their satisfaction, but it is a very good scriptural basis for everything.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, my notes on that verse remind us that Job believed in that. Well, this is what they call it. I didn't know what they called it. Inflexible retribution dogma. That means they explain.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, that suffering views suffering in this world as God's punishment for sin, and that's what Job believed, and that's what his friends.
That the only reason for suffering was because of that.
Punishment for sin, and so God is having to continually work with Job to change his thinking, because once you believe the world is flat instead of round, you know, you're going to have a hard time being convinced of something else.
Yeah. Kelly.
I think probably an answer that you hear when you're dealing with somebody, we tend to project our image onto God. Like we say things like, well, if I were God, I would, you know,